Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Before we begin today's episode, just a very quick note. We have two seats left in the Author's Knot. This is the intimate 10-month online writing program for thought leaders, memoirists, novelists, and heart-led visionaries who are working on a book or another big project in 2026. If you've heard me mention the program and you've been curious, this is the moment to act. As I said, we have two seats left at the time of this recording, and if one is yours, let me know. Head over to marisagowdy.com and search for the Author's Knot. You'll also find the link in the show notes. We begin at the end of January, and I can tell you, based on our 2025 experience, it is a remarkable, remarkable thing to sit down and share your work over the space of a year, to receive compassionate feedback from other writers who become as devoted to your work as they are to their own. Head over to marisagowdy.com and click on the Author's Knot for more. Season 6, Episode 40, Chiron and His Wild Holy Kin. I record this episode on a day that is marked with many names, that comes from many interwoven traditions. January 6th, the Feast of the Epiphany, Little Christmas, Three Kings Day, Nollag Niman, which is the Irish tradition of women's Christmas, which was mostly celebrated down in Cork and Kerry, and was said to be a time when the women did not work. They sat together and raised a glass and celebrated each other and all that they'd done to keep the holidays in motion. It seems as if that this particular holiday was less about something of ancestral memory, though it was in fact real. It was celebrated in a small part of Ireland. But I love the way it's become something that really seems to connect people, especially women, across the world. Imagining Nollag Niman, imagining a way in which Christmas could belong to women. Because of course, this holiday is so focused on that birth of the holy child, right? When in fact, what if we looked at it more as a day upon which a woman gave birth? This whole time of year, it offers us such traditions, and by that way, it becomes a traditional way of seeing things. But when we can really play with the interweaving and the layering of these different ways of marking what clearly seems to be, what we clearly know to be a very special time of year, there's so much that's revealed. Because of course, this is the 12th day of Christmas. It's the last of the omen days on January 6th, if you started counting the day after Christmas. And so perhaps you, like me, have spent these last 12 days looking for signs and portents, auguries, and omens, with each day corresponding to a month in the new year. I talk more about this in that episode that I released back on the solstice, and I hope that you've given yourself a chance to enter into this liminal time with the sense of wonder that opens your senses to omens and possibilities. And if you haven't, well, the calendar is just a modern construct. Begin right now. Begin with the new moon. Begin with the moment that feels right to you. What I've noticed most for myself over these last 12 days of collecting omens, and even before when I started thinking about it on the solstice, I'm just aware of how remarkable it would be to move through life with my senses this open, as if it were really true. That nature, that synchronicity, that conversation you had that you didn't expect, all have something meaningful woven into them. Because I think, in fact, that is the essence of life well lived, if we can pay attention. Not because we're looking for signs of certain doom or because we always need to find a lucky penny on the ground, but because the world is alive and it wants to communicate with us and it wants us to communicate with it and it wants us to dissolve the it idea of anything, and it becomes about being in a relationship with all that is. So I'm going to tell you a story that has an awful lot to do with dissolving some of our own myths and ideas of separation. I'm telling you this particular story today. I've been saving it for today because there's a star in it. We all know the tale of the Magi following the star to Bethlehem and to the manger. This would be the day that they arrive with their gifts. Well, I have a story for you that's certainly not as well known, that begins with a star and lands us in some other very remarkable place about the interconnections of human and nature, of spirit and wonder. You're actually going to hear a live recording of a story that I shared in the Mythworkers Salon back at the start of December. These are the groups that I call together about every 6 or 8 weeks on Sunday mornings in the Eastern time zone. We gather together on Zoom and I tell a story, and then the group explores it together, dwelling on the images, the feelings, the mysteries evoked by it. In many ways, it's like doing a live episode of Knotwork Myth and Storytelling. So I do have a couple more of those scheduled coming up on February 15th and April 12th. So as you heard at the top of the show, you're always invited to support Knotwork Myth and Storytelling by subscribing as a paid member of my Myth is Medicine newsletter. So if you'd like to do so, and if you'd like to join us on February 15th for another story, I'd be very grateful to have you there. The link is in the show notes. Okay, so this is an awful lot of preamble for a show that is meant to ask the story to speak for itself. Let's cue up that tale that I told live in the Mythworkers Salon, the story of Chiron and his wild holy kin. And at the end, I'll talk a little bit more about how it's continuing to resonate for me. Let's begin. It is Sunday, December 7th in the year 2025. It's the final Mythworkers Salon event of the year. I'm so grateful to all of you who support the work and Knotwork Myth and Storytelling and Myth is Medicine on Substack. I can't do this without you. And I'm just so grateful for the monetary contribution is phenomenal, but it's really the hearts that you all share with me and the love and the support and the receiving of the stories and the way you tell me that they work on you and with you and through you is nothing short of remarkable. And I'm deeply, deeply grateful. Okay, so with that, anchored into time and reality, such as the calendar dictates, but also we'll enter into dream and spaces where time works differently. So with our candle lit, we'll start this circle. We'll open this circle to all. I invite you to land here, to find yourself in this moment, whether you're just starting your day or you've already been running around to a million things. Let's just allow this to be a moment of arrival, to feel your seat on your seat and your feet on the floor, and anchoring into the patch of the planet that holds you with gratitude, and calling up that sense of presence that comes from the earth, and calling up that up through self and cells and soul and into the imaginal realm that we all share, where we will all play together today, to witness the story as it unfolds, to witness the responses that come from inside of us as we hear the story, to witness one another as we share a bit of what touches us, what troubles us, what excites us and interests us, as we play, as we ponder, as we wonder, and as we wander. We are here, we are here, we are here. And so I am going to tell you the story of Chiron of Seir. So Seir is actually a place in County Offaly. But I do rather love the way that Seir really evokes this idea of the visionary, of the person, of the being who can see between the worlds and perhaps weave the two worlds together. Because that's very much what this story is about in my mind. It's about that ability to stand in the liminal spaces, to call together the this and the that, to create something new, perhaps. And I'm always very careful that something I've learned from experience, but also learned from studying, is that you don't tell a story what it is. That's a line from Martin Shaw. But I've learned it myself, often sometimes the hard way. I've tried to force this story in the past, and now I'm trying to let this story bubble up and bubble through. So in that spirit, I do not want to ask anyone to receive this story in a particular way. And yet also, I would like to perhaps request that you do receive it in a gentle way, because this story could be seen in many ways as a story of conversion. And this story does take place in that moment when Ireland was tilting toward Christianity. And that could bring up so much inside of us based on our own lived experience and our own understandings of histories. So I offer you this story, and I'm still working on whether I feel like I'm a pagan Catholic or a Catholic pagan, which one is the main noun and which one is the modifier. And I think it's always the both and the and it keeps shifting and changing, because I've shifted and changes throughout my life. And I know that at this point, I'm offering a great weave. So I just invite you to receive this story with that sense of gentleness of the both and the and that perhaps it even gives us a chance to look beyond some of the binaries that might come. So as I said, this is a story of Ciarán of Cir, but it begins not with him, but with his mother, Queen Liadán, who had a vision one night of a great star that fell from the sky and fell into her mouth, a star that fell into her mouth and down into the very depths of her belly. And she woke up the next day and she realized something had changed, something was new. A few days later, she realized what it was. She felt that she had a baby growing in the depths of her belly, and she had a sense that this star-born child had some great destiny, would somehow shift and change the future of the island of Ireland. And she would be proven right over time. Now, Ciarán grew up in a time when the world was changing and shifting. The ways people looked at the world and looked at belief and looked at faith was starting to shift. Perhaps one might say expand, perhaps one might say contract, but it was changing nonetheless. And so he grew up in a society in which once he might have become a druid, but in this case, he had his eye on something different. But no matter what, from the very beginning, he was drawn to nature, interwoven with nature itself. There's a story now. This may be of this particular Ciarán or of another, because many Ciarans were wandering the stage at this point in time. But it's said that when Ciarán was 7 or 8 years old, he saw a hawk up in the sky. And he saw that hawk dip into that deadly sort of dive they go into when they're about to gobble something up. He saw that hawk hell-bent on a songbird's nest. And he called out and he held up his hands, and the hawk heeded him. The hawk heard Ciarán and was willing to shift his path and save that songbird on that day. So there was always a sense that Ciarán had a special connection to nature, to the natural world, that he could communicate, that he had the senses to see what was happening, and that nature itself would respond. So if he'd been born perhaps a generation before, his feet would have taken him to a sacred grove, and he most likely would have started up with the druids. But he was born at a different time. So when he had itchy feet, he didn't just walk across to the next group of trees. He walked across to the great, to climb aboard a ship. And he climbed aboard that ship, and then he crossed an entire continent, and he found himself in Rome. Because that's the place where the new story was emerging. That's the place that young men and young women were going when they had a sense that there was something new to learn and know. And that's the place where Patrick was, because Patrick, the once upon a time slave from man from Wales, who was kidnapped and brought to Ireland and enslaved, who escaped and then returned to Ireland again to bring the word of this new religion he had found, he was now in Rome. And Ciarán went to find him there. And that's where Patrick offered him baptism. And not just baptism, but a gift, the gift of a bell, And so, as anyone would, when Kieran received this bell, he brought it up to his ear to ring it. And that's when Patrick laughed and said, "Oh no, my dear, this is not that sort of bell. This bell will not sing until you find the place where you are meant to root and land. This bell will not ring until you find the place where you are meant to found your community, your monastery." And so with that unusual sort of gift, Kieran returned back to Ireland. He crossed the entire continent and sailed across the sea until he found himself home again. And once he was home, he wandered. He wandered and wandered, waiting for that bell to ring, along the coasts, with all the most, and along beside the most beautiful mountains, all these places he would love to settle down. But of course, as is the way, it was only when he was walking through the deepest, darkest forest, a place that is neither here nor there, the kind of place you pass through, hoping to get somewhere more hospitable and more beautiful. Of course, this is where the bell rang. A deep, dark forest where he had no intention of staying. But when one is given a miracle, one listens. And so he set down his satchel, he set down his bell, and he began to work. Now, as some stories say, he began by digging the cemetery, which seems like a strange sort of thing to do, perhaps rather a bleak sort of thing to do. But this would have been a man who was born in a world that understood birth and life and death and rebirth. He'd been born, he'd been doing quite a bit of living. What was coming next was death. And so that's what he was setting his mind to. And as he was, he heard a rustle in the underbrush, and he looked, and he saw two glittering eyes, glittering and beady all at once, glittering and beady eyes before a long snout, and beyond that long snout, two terrible tusks. Now, Kieran had grown up on this land. He was a boy who knew nature. He was a man who'd grown up to respect and fear it, and he knew that when you face a wild boar alone in the wood, well, perhaps you'll need that cemetery. And so this is when he began. Now, let's remember, he began to pray, but let's remember where he came from. His mother was the type who swallowed stars and had visions and gave birth to sacred sons. So what kind of prayers would he have woven in this moment? Hail Mary, full of grace, Hail Mary, full of grace, Hail Mary, full of grace. And at that moment, the boar started to approach, but not with a rush and a killer's gaze, but bending her head, dipping her tusks to the ground, a bow rather than an attack. There must have been something in that prayer that called her in. And so she helped Kieran. She worked beside him, clearing the land so he could build his very first dwelling out of saplings. And they worked together. And over time, they attracted some attention again. This time, another set of glittering eyes from the wood. These set of glittering eyes was attached to a set of tall peaked ears and a long, long snout and a set of terrible teeth. And certainly Kieran said, well, finally, this is the end. I know enough to know that when a wolf comes into your clearing alone, she is hungry and she will swallow me up. But in just the same way, the wolf approached and bowed her head, bringing her nose to the earth and offering her help, asking to be made part of the circle. And then the same happened with a badger and finally with a fox. And so here we have five: Kieran, the boar, the wolf, the badger, the fox, perhaps something like the five sacred provinces of Ireland, with Kieran working as the center, working as the holy center to hold everyone together. And they got on. They got on until one day, once the dwelling was built and Kieran woke up in the morning, he went to go put his feet into his slippers and recognized they were not there. And so he walked out and he asked his brethren, "Slippers, anyone seen them?" The badger had a glitter in his eyes. Now, we haven't quite established whether or not these are wind in the willows type creatures, whether they had the gift of language and there was lots of conversating happening back and forth between Kieran and the creatures. I'll leave that up to you. But at any rate, it was quite clear. The badger had that look. Now, Kieran had not spent a great deal of time in monastic communities himself. He was born and raised and traveled and has come back and forth. He was looking to start a community, but he was really sort of alone most of the time. But he had a sense that the badger had something of the cleric in him, that sense of being able to craft community, or at least craft community rules, and then decide to be the one to uphold them. Because the badger took it upon himself to go find the fox with that glitter in his eye. And he didn't approach the fox very kindly when outside of Chiron's gaze. Some say he nipped the ears and the tail of the fox. Some say he trussed him up and tied him, grabbed him in one hand, or paw, I should say, and grabbed the slippers in the other and returned to Chiron and said, "Ha, I found him, the great sinner." And Chiron sighed. He dismissed the badger in his officious ways, his ways of making and keeping rules, and told him to go out and dig some more rutabagas. And he untied the fox lovingly, and he looked to him, and he said, "Brother Fox, you've broken our rules. Not only have you stolen my slippers, but when you came and sat in the circle with me, you took a pledge to be a vegetarian. And so you picked up my slippers because obviously you were still lusting for blood. But I can tell you that it has been so long since these slippers were once the hide of a cow. There's nothing left here of meat, only a bit of man sweat around the toes. Maybe you like that sort of thing." At this point, the fox was down, not only on his knees, but down in his belly, begging for forgiveness. But let's imagine that Chiron wasn't quite so interested in that. He was instead, in that moment, looking to the fox and saying, "Oh, you were only uniting with your own true nature. In that moment, you were being yourself. Because, of course, it's only in this community that we ask something as strange as beasts of the wood to live off of turnips and watercress." And so, rather than offering penance and decades of the rosary, I like to imagine that this was a moment for everyone to pause and recognize the powers of their rules that held community together, but also the power that each individual brought with them, who they were, who they could still be, even when joined in community. Now, the story of Chiron would go on. Men would gather and truly build this into a monastery such as we know it today. Liadon, Chiron's mother, would come with her own band of women, and they would begin to create a great bustling community of all those gathered with a central idea, a faith, a belief, an unfolding investigation of a story that was still new. And Chiron himself would show himself to be quite bold when there would be a king who would go and not only kidnap one of the young maidens from the community, but also assault her and impregnate her. Not only would Chiron make that baby vanish, but he would resurrect a few folks along the way who were killed within the conflict. So there's a great deal more to tell of Chiron's story. But where I want to land it now is a story of a man and a circle of animals sitting in a deep, dark wood, forming a community. And perhaps it might be said that he was taming these wild beasts, that he was trying to turn them into something new, something they were not. But perhaps we could slow it down and be with this idea for just a moment, that he was every bit as changed as they were, that they were all sitting in a circle that was as much about reciprocity as it was about teaching and learning. This was a place where Chiron's own animal nature was allowed to thrive and grow. That there is something sacred and beautiful to being human and to looking to something greater than just the next meal and life and tooth and claw. But I'll leave it there as something of a mystery and something for us to all open up into together. As we sit with a man and four beasts, as we sit here together with our human and animal natures, all interwoven inside of us and between us. And say for now, the story is done. Shine. Let's open it up and tell each other some new stories based on what might have emerged. And so from there, a conversation ensued with a beautiful collection of souls, story lovers, myth workers, who each had their own ideas and curiosities about what unfolded. A lot of what we talked about explored what it means to tame the wild, and certainly our own struggles with what feels like a very anthropocentric way of going about things. I know I, at first, had certainly been very offended by the way in which it seemed as if the Gospels were being forced upon all the creatures of the earth. That pagan soul in me really woke up. And I know I shared within the group that I had actually tried to share this story on the podcast last spring, back at Easter time. And I realized only over time that the reason I wanted to share it was that I wanted to quarrel with it. I wanted to make a point about the way that our own anthropocentric vision was destroying our earth, the way that we had lost all sense of being in relationship, fichifuicha, interwoven with the everything that was, as we started to assume that everything was about us. And we know this is a very 21st century kind of concept here as we are in the potential age of the Anthropocene. But here was a story recorded in the 8th century about a 5th century saint. And I was deeply disheartened by that. But then I kept journeying with it, and I kept exploring and going back to why it was that John Moriarty, that's the first place that I found this story, was really telling it. And it was much more about that sense of recovering, reconnecting with, understanding that at some level we truly do have an animal soul, that we are every bit as much part of this earth as wolf and boar and badger and fox. And that there's something truly remarkable, not about the way that Chiron used these animals in order to build a monastery, but the fact that someone recorded a story about this man and these four creatures all sitting together, working with one another to create an unorthodox sort of community. And sure, eventually this did become a monastic settlement and it would have become a very human-centric sort of place. But the story reminds us that the origins come from a woman who swallowed a star in her dreams and saw a great vision for all that might be changed in the island of Ireland. And then there was a boy grown into a man seeking spirit and community who found it not in the traditional way of going to a monastery and applying for admission, but instead he wandered. And then he called in wild holy kin. And then he was changed by them, and they were changed by him, and they created some brand new sort of community. I know for me, in so many ways, that's what I'm searching for in my own small way. So I want to close us with one more bit of remarkable synchronicity that really seems to underscore the both-and-ness of all of this work. I named myself as a pagan Catholic or a Catholic pagan within the story. And that's something I am slowly sort of coming to grips with and recognizing that my truest nature is always the this and the that. And sometimes that feels as if I'm refusing to pick a side. And I'm sort of hanging out in the middle space all the time because there's a joy in being a liminal creature, right? Because right now we're moving through the liminal spaces between holidays, between years, between omens. But sometimes too much liminality makes you feel like you're someone who's always lingering in doorways. Sometimes I struggle with that. But more often lately, I'm finding more confirmation that there's magic in that ability to move between the worlds and to hold space for both worlds, perhaps like complementary opposites, and knowing that inside the self, it truly is possible to find a sense of integrity, of integration, of rooting into that which is real, that comes before and after and through all these different human stories and interpretations. So I was picking up a book by another Kieran, though I think Kieran Carson doesn't actually put the fada over the second A in his name. So I think he goes by Kieran Carson. I met him once at a book reading, and he was the kindest man and just had a, well, it often isn't right to say that an Irishman has a twinkle in his eye, but legitimately this man did. And he just had a warmth about him and a humor that made you feel so beautifully seen. He's a poet for the most part, but he also wrote a series of, actually on the cover it says, this is an indispensable genre-defying book. And I would say that's very true of this book called The Star Factory, which is in many ways a memoir of his own Belfast childhood, but is just tucked with so many other little mysteries about that sense of place, about history, about mythology, and about St. Kieran. So he actually quotes at length from a book his father gave him, which was called The Knights of God, an anthology compiled by a woman named Patricia Lynch. I'm going to read to you the long passage that he quotes from Patricia Lynch's book, because it adds an element to the Kieran story I hadn't discovered anywhere else in my research of looking to John Moriarty and Martin Shaw's telling and looking to the original manuscripts that are found at Celt.ie. Let me read you this one bit before we say farewell, and we'll leave it as something of a sacred riddle and something to keep dancing with and considering all these ways in which the wild and the monastic, in which the pagan and the Christian, in which these different ways of being keep swirling around us because they're so core to the Irish tradition, but I think because they're also core to who we are as modern humans, reckoning with these different ways of being and knowing in this particular 21st century moment, made of so many different overlapping worlds. Now, in this particular excerpt of the story, Kieran has been to Rome, the bell has rung, the animals have gathered together, and now here he is living in his monastic settlement and having a sleepless night. Kieran stood up and went out of the hut. Dawn was coming over the wood. The tops of the trees were touched with gold. He could hear the crackling of dried leaves and twigs. Strangers were coming. He climbed the hill which rose above his oratory. At the horizon, clouds piled against the sky. Are they clouds? Wondered Kieran. Turrets, golden and rose-colored, stood beyond the waves. Towers, white or palest blue, rose from glowing roofs. Dawn came through windows shaped like flowers and stars. Kieran had heard stories of Phalias, Gorias, Phineas, Murias, ancient magic cities of the Dedannans who lived in Ireland before the days of history. They were built in a single night, each with its special treasure. Could this be one of those cities? Then seven hills rose beyond the glittering roofs, and Kieran gazed once more upon the glories of Rome while the bell of St. Patrick rang from the oratory. In that story, I don't hear that the hills of Rome destroyed those four ancient cities of the Tuatha. I hear that they all dwell together in the imagination, in some sort of reality that we all share. And so as we move into 2026, I hope that you're able to continue to move between the worlds, to feel the magic on your skin, to be collecting omens even on a mundane March day or some moment in September. Continue to look for all the ways in which we are interwoven with all of our wild kin, the ways in which they wish to remain wild, but also just might wish to be in relationship with us, so that we can find the wildness within ourselves and allow that energy to grow and grow in this modern world that has become entirely too tame. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.